Welcome to Beyond the Blockchain with Scott Tindall, a discussion of blockchain technology, cryptocurrency, and why it matters to you.
Hey folks, welcome into Beyond the Blockchain with Scott and Johnny. We're happy to be here with you every Wednesday night. Johnny, we still need to get this intro updated, so
I'm not taking it personally.
I know you don't. It's fine.
Busy people. I don't get upset with busy people not doing things that need to be done because they're busy people.
That's fair.
All right.
Oh, yeah, that's fair and reasonable.
It is, and I appreciate that. Yeah. My name is
got,
on the podcast.
Got the name
Philip says
the podcast.
My name is on the podcast.
So. Perfect. Welcome back, folks, to Beyond the Blockchain, where every Wednesday night we get to talk about fun things like cryptocurrency, blockchain technology, artificial intelligence, machine learning, and then just beyond the blockchain with wherever Johnny and I happen to enjoy spending our evening, which can sometimes be entertaining, at least for us. I hope the listeners are finding it entertaining as well, but it's at least three of us are having fun tonight.
Well, they say entertainment and joy is contagious. So if we are entertained and joyous, then maybe it will radiate through the masses, through the FM.
It's like smile and dial. Remember the old sales tactic, smile and dial? What we're doing. We're smiling and radioing. And I always have a great time, so I hope it comes out and other people have a great time as well.
Well, I'm lucky to be here. I've been a little down. So.
You have been down. Yeah. We're thankful that due to modern medicine.
Magic things. Yeah. I'm here and enjoying myself.
So better living through chemistry.
We can talk about the blockchain.
Yeah, well, there's important things to talk about tonight, Johnny.
Well, there are. I mean,
what's on the top of your mind? What is the most important thing we need to talk about this week?
Okay, so I want to kind of like sandwich together some of our segments because usually we start with what's in the news.
Of course.
Let's do a segment, maybe two segments, with the idea of using the news.
Okay.
Like what's in the news with the idea of is there a coming bull market? Are there signals and are there triggers right now that people are seeing to say that is there maybe this rise of a bull market in the crypto markets?
Well, you know how to get my attention.
Yes.
When you talk about a rise in markets, you get my attention.
That's what you're saying. Well, but the idea is that we saw, you know, 2020, part of 21, the pandemic, we saw this rise of a true bull market in crypto. And then, of course, we saw the big fall. So the first one is the debt ceiling that we talked about nonstop on 106.5 coming this upcoming debt
ceiling. I'm sure Sean has covered this, yes.
And so it was an opinion piece, and I know this is a terrible sounding name for a website, but CryptoPotato.com actually is more of a hub of a bunch of stories, and it's an opinion piece. And analysis, I'm in the wrong story here. So what happens to Bitcoin if the U.S. debt ceiling cracks so they don't get a deal, right? Mm-hmm. Roughly what this opinion piece says after looking at many, many, many people that are saying this, there will be a problem across the board because the dollar is in a precarious position, the possible de-dollarization right now. The markets will fall. You'll see a lot of traditional things go down, and the crypto market will go down with the stock market. Mm-hmm. But in a brief time, you're going to see big money fall into safe havens. And the idea is gold and silver is already there, I think. But Bitcoin is actually becoming, and we'll get further down about these other triggers, of people are starting to put money into this digital gold. So the idea is it will drop at first and then rise up.
So basically this kind of concept that we've been beating the drum about for several years may finally be on the precipice of seeing major financial action into that ecosystem.
Well, it's a different asset class that people do not have in their portfolio. Smart people got in 2012 and 2011, the really smart people. To be honest, I mean, really smart people got in at certain times and got out at certain times. You can get it. If you'd have got in a year ago, you'd have close to doubled your money in Bitcoin in the last year,
right?
Which we have a story about that later in the end of the show about how it just destroys what oil has done. I mean, according to Bitcoin to that. So the idea is like this debt ceiling will affect crypto markets, but on, again, patience weighs out, right? Especially with Bitcoin. Like I'm a holder. I hold my Bitcoin. I'm not getting rid of it. I'll let it go to zero before I get rid of it. But the idea is that is one of the things you'll see with the debt ceiling. So is that a trigger, meaning markets are down, but Bitcoin and some crypto will be up? Here is the other one, that China and Asia really move the ticker. Asia really moves it too. Well, China puts a lot of problems with especially Bitcoin and Ethereum on exchanges. there has been state-run China TV, and especially in Hong Kong, where a lot of crypto talk has been like talking about buying Bitcoin or the idea of China getting back in the market. So that, again, is a question mark in front of that. Is China lifting the ban? And a lot of people are saying, yeah, they're going to regulate the heck out of it. But the idea is China is going to share this idea of, is there going to be another trigger for us to see what we saw in 2020?
Well, I think that China lifting the ban would be interesting in a number of capacities. One, they've already run everyone out of the country with all the equipment.
Well, Hong Kong is a little different.
Well, Hong Kong is totally different. No, Hong Kong is totally different. Yeah. So we're not talking about mainland China. Hong Kong is a totally different situation. When we come back, Johnny, I want to keep talking about triggers.
I got three more.
Is Bitcoin about to take off? You got some more triggers. We don't know. We're not predicting anything. But when we come back on Beyond the Blockchain, Johnny Gwynn is going to tell us about a few more things that he thinks are pretty interesting about the price action of Bitcoin coming up on Beyond the Blockchain.
Welcome back to Beyond the Blockchain with Scott Tindall.
Hey, folks, welcome back to Beyond the Blockchain with Scott and Johnny and Philip on the board. We're having fun with this every Wednesday night, like we always like to do. We got to talk a little bit about Bitcoin and some triggers that may be pushing on the market here. Johnny, you did a really good job on the first half. You talked about the sandwich you want to build, the sandwich of information.
Right. News and commentary.
All right. So I like this. I like this strategy.
Again, not financial advice.
Ever?
Just.
Not ever.
Never.
Never financial
just,
advice.
We're asking the question, are we seeing the possibility of a crypto bull run? Are there triggers? Are there signals?
All right. Okay. So when you're looking at this, you're seeing indicators.
Right.
So they're popping up on your radar. What's another indicator you're seeing that gives you optimism about Bitcoin and its future?
Okay. Real quick, let me go back to China. So this is the chief executive officer of Binance. Right. He's the one that said he's predicting China could be the trigger. So this guy knows.
Not CZ, though.
Yeah, CZ.
Oh, CZ.
Yeah, CZ.
Okay.
But the idea, so this is Forbes.com, too. This is not CryptoPotato.com. This is major news.
Forbes, I've heard of them. Forbes.
Yeah. And the title of the article is, "It's a Big Deal. Crypto suddenly braced for a huge China earthquake after Bitcoin, Ethereum, BNB, XRP, Cardano, Dogecoin." Roughly China. And again, it was a question mark. Are they lifting the ban? Okay, so you got the U.S. government not doing a good job with their economy. Boom, that looks good for Bitcoin. You got China saying we're going to open up some markets possibility. That's good for a bull run. Number three, Wall Street, which poo-pooed on crypto for a whole decade. They literally, it's Ponzi scheme. It's this. You got J.P. Morgan analysts now projecting because of the debt ceiling and all this thing and the de-dollarization, $45,000 for Bitcoin the next year. But they're calling it gold. They're saying it's like gold. You should have it in your portfolio just like you would have gold. Again, as a hedge.
The conspiracy theorist in me says that they've believed this for the past 5 years.
And they missed it.
And they drove the price. They intentionally drove the price down so they could gobble it up at 13. Yep. And then sell it to us at 26, 39,
history says
50,
yes.
Whatever.
History says yes. But I heard that from the early Bitcoin OGs that did buy in 2012 and 11 and said they're going to do this, just letting you know, and they're going to destroy it to buy it back in because they missed the opening window. And boy, does it feel. It looks and feels that way, you know.
So, I think we've had previous conversations about this, and we don't have to get into it now, but 17, 18 months ago, I had Chinese nationals telling me that the Chinese were going to drive down the price of Bitcoin in an effort to start gobbling back up.
Right.
Because they own so much. They can strategically work together to dump at strategic times.
Sure.
And cabal. They're cabaling. It's a Bitcoin cabaling episode tonight on Beyond the Blockchain.
So the last bit of this is about the Bitcoin. We need to do a show on the Bitcoin halving, which
of course
halving, which is interesting as heck. Really, it's not what you think it is. All kind of stuff. But the idea is, it says furthermore, the increase in production cost. Because that's what's going to happen with the halving. It's going to doubly cost the amount of money it takes to mine Bitcoin. When this happens, Bitcoin will be seen as a more attractive investment and could lead to it becoming as popular as gold in the eyes of investors. JP Morgan analyst, man. This is not Max Kaiser. This is not one of these crypto, orange pilled Bitcoin maximalist. This is a JP Morgan analyst.
Do you have a Jamie Dimon tattoo on you somewhere?
Of course I do not. Again, he's a super
villain. You sound like a Jamie Dimon fanboy,
he's
Johnny.
A true super villain.
Are you sure?
Man, he is.
All right. Sounds like you're on team Jamie Dimon as much as you're pumping JP Morgan right now.
Well, again, I'm just saying and then I sent you a tweet where the guy from Fidelity, again, another, big Wall Street firm that says the amazing thing about Bitcoin is it's like gold, but it has a disruption of technology.
It sounds to me like these 401k financial advisors may be thinking they may have clearance soon to include crypto in their portfolios.
Again,
and so they're gearing up for that. Because right now, if you go to your traditional, Merrill Lynch or whomever financial advisor, my understanding is they're not allowed to proffer crypto as part of their offerings.
They can barely talk about it.
Right.
Everybody ate a lot of bad things when they said we can't get into Bitcoin, but let's buy stock in things like Coinbase and these things that serve it dropped 80%. I mean,
Marathon, the Bitcoin mining company.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, all this crazy stuff. Okay, so U.S. government, China, the halving, Wall Street, all in. And I'm going to say the word lizard people are all in. Okay, I don't believe in lizard people. I'm just saying the people who.
Why not?
Well, I'm just saying maybe. I'm just saying the cabal, the cabal of the elites. This is BlackRock. BlackRock, seriously, they have how many bazillions of dollars and their tentacles?
They have all the bazillions.
Are literally in everything in our lives. Is BlackRock the CEO dollar warning? So this is the CEO talking about the dollar warning of the U.S. dollar. He is bullish on Bitcoin, and this is BlackRock talking about that they're going to start participating in BlackRock, and the idea is this is largely because Bitcoin is seen as a potential safe haven for investors. This is coming from literally,
Meanwhile, I would say is a
World Economic Forum, money holder.
Meanwhile, you've got the state of New York issuing Bitcoin mining bans.
Well, yes.
Along the way. So you've got this real high level adoption that may be starting to take place.
Right.
But from a state legislator perspective, these people can barely get their clothes on every day and make it to work.
And they don't.
How in the world are they going to start regulating cryptocurrency?
Well, and then they bring an environmentalist to stop Bitcoin by saying that, the immense amount of energy you're using, you have to use this wastewater to cool down your computers and you're making our lakes warmer. And they found out it was all this major story about a year ago, and they found out it was all debunked.
Well, I mean,
all debunked.
How much power is being burned at abandoned bank offices right now?
Hold on.
I can't drive past a bank without seeing it closed. Regional bank branch.
Yeah.
But they're still burning power. They're still burning those lights. They're still burning. So I don't want to hear anything about power consumption related to one form of transactions related to another.
Look, another super villain, Senator Warren, which she is not. Oh, she's so horrible. But she right now is bringing up the fentanyl crisis and saying crypto is the problem because we have a fentanyl crisis because of crypto.
How was the two
come
connected?
On? Well, the funding of manufacturers and all this stuff. And look, there's so many things to that issue, but that's her big issue because she's against it. And the idea is forget all the other things. Let's just go ahead. And the idea of find a way to quit bringing in the country. That'd be a first place to start. By the way,
well, look, if we could start with getting fentanyl under control, then we would be less concerned about crypto. I'm way more concerned about the fentanyl than I am crypto.
But again, they use a straw dog. They use something else to say get rid of this by saying this is a problem. This is why it's the problem. So and they can't fix the other thing, so they'll work on this one. And then the last thing is, so you get BlackRock. Okay, the last thing is even the haters are now talking about crypto. Mm. Peter Schiff.
I've heard of him.
Has hated crypto. Has hated Bitcoin since day. He's an economist.
He is
and a writer.
Gold anti. Yeah. He's the pro gold anti Bitcoin, spokesmodel.
Right, and he's the one that says it's. He still says it's worthless. By the way, but he just launched. He just launched a Bitcoin NFT art collection. To me, it feels like
it's perfect. To me, it's trolling.
To me, it feels like it's trolling.
Yeah, it's trolling.
Like, or he's, but again, he'll make money on it.
Of course,
he will. Because he's creating 50. There's physical art plus the NFT that you can buy as a collectible and as a piece of art, right? And it's called like the. Let's see, what's the name?
I kind of want to buy one of these.
Well, it's only 50 of them. I can't imagine much money.
But you know what I mean? Like for you know how we were always talking about like. What are unique things you wish you owned? Like, this is going to be such a disaster that I want to be a part of it.
Okay, so the highest bidder will receive number one of the collection, with the next 49 highest bidders receiving number two and number five in descending order. It's terrible art, by the way. By the way, it's a big hunk of gold in a person's hand.
So yeah, but you don't get any gold.
No,
you
no, it's a picture
you're
of
just get an NFT.
It's a picture. So, and
I kind of want a Peter Schiff NFT just for the irony.
Right, exactly. Well, that's the whole thing of like, in the world of like art, they say a fake is like, can be just as expensive
as
the real thing because the fake has such a wonderful story behind it, you know? So again, it's this idea of, we don't know price action. Man, you can't, Scott.
No,
Scott
we don't pretend to.
Can't even read a technical to save our, like an analysis of technical to save our lives. But we can look at things. We can look at cultural things, political things, economic things, and we can read people who do kind of know the history of this stuff. And they can say, it looks like there is this possibility of a window of a bull run coming up in at least Bitcoin and the heavier Ethereum coins.
I think that the first people that start asking for AI large language model payment in crypto will change the game.
Well, you know, ChatGPT has its own token.
Well, I know, but not everybody has access to chat. That's part of the problem.
It's on a weird exchange. It's on a really tiny exchange.
So, like, moving on to AI a little bit, just like, I don't even use ChatGPT anymore because it's too hard to access. I use Bard.
Right.
Bard from Google, and I get great results because Bard now can access the internet. Right. Now, you still need to double check what you're doing. Did you see the story about the attorney who...
Oh, no.
Oh, my God. This is brutal. Off topic here, just a second, but on topic. There's an attorney that cited cases that ChatGPT gave him.
Oh, no.
AI hallucinations. The case has never existed. The AI,
it sounds right.
ChatGPT wrote the opinions, cited prior cases, and AI hallucinated cases that this man cited.
Yeah.
Oh no.
Bad results.
It seems like you could lose your license.
Will lose his license.
Yeah, that is unbelievable.
There's a very small chance that man does not lose his license.
Look, I know people in the scholarly world, academics. And trust me, you know, I have heard stories of a word that was similar to another word and it had nothing to do, like, let's just say something had to do with sewing and then, or you were writing about something in business and it had to do with like the word of stitching.
Right.
It had nothing to do with business. It had to do with sewing and that was in your paper. And because they didn't even read.
They didn't even read
their plagiarized paper and they turned it in. I mean, I hear about that all the time. There was a professor, I think an Ivy League school, that held back like all of these seniors graduating because he thought every paper that he got was
AI,
and then because he didn't know. Then they said, "Well, how do you know?" And he says, "Because I put it in AI." And it goes, "If you put it in AI, it reads it as AI."
Right.
And he goes, "Oh, I didn't know that." Look, what a fool! That's what people.
Academia is going to have a really hard problem with AI and large language models.
Yeah.
I don't know how they're going to deal with it. I think you're going to see a return to in-person assessment. You see a return to handwritten assessment. It's going to be the only way to actually verify somebody knows what they say they know. And the next question is going to be, do we care? Or do I want to know that you're competent to use the tools to get me the answers I need?
So, again, one of my favorite memes right now on Twitter when someone's complaining about AI is going to take my job. You know, I keep seeing that. Someone posts this picture of one like a Hall of Fame tweet, and it's like, dude, AI is not going to take your job. A person that knows how to use AI is going to take your job.
That's 100%.
And I was like, golly, what a great answer to, like, hey, man, if you see what's coming and you can learn this stuff, you can literally up your game where you are, like, your company can't get rid of you because you are the AI champion in, you know, acme.com.
There is someone at every company right now that looks around and goes, I don't really know what my extraordinary skill set is. Yeah, I don't know what my function is.
Right.
I don't know what my extraordinary skill set is. I know I'm a good person. I know I work hard. I know a good job, but I don't know what makes me indispensable.
Look,
in learning AI and large learning LLMs, large learning language models, will make you that person in your company that is indispensable.
So, and somebody says, I don't have time for that. Bull. I don't have the money for that. Bull.
It's all free.
Free on YouTube. Literally, right. All you have to do is put how to make AI prompts.
Right.
And there's hundreds of really small 1 minute videos up to 2 hour classes.
You know what I would recommend?
Oh, that's free. Right. I mean, that's free right there. And you can, again, 1 minute to 2 hours. Okay. Here's the other thing. Entrepreneur Store Magazine, I just got a thing. I think it was Entrepreneur. It might be socialstack.com. Literally a $300 AI prompt class, like, mm-hmm. you know, a four-hour class, you know, teaches you, $27.
It's pretty cheap. You know what I would recommend?
So cheap.
If you, the next time you're watching Netflix and you see the little thing comes across the screen and says, are you still watching?
Right.
Press no.
Oh, interesting.
And go and try and learn something, because long have we been sitting in front of Netflix that Netflix is prompting us to, are you still alive?
Squid Game. You've watched enough Squid Game, man.
Yeah.
Move on.
All right. When we come back from Beyond the Blockchain, we're going to dive back into more Bitcoin price action and just the fun things.
Presidential.
And some presidential information about how people feel about crypto. We come back on Beyond the Blockchain.
Welcome back to Beyond the Blockchain with Scott Tindall.
Hey, folks, welcome back to Beyond the Blockchain with Scott and Johnny. We got Philip on the board here with us tonight. Hey. Thanks, Philip, for keeping us running, man. We always have a good time with you. Johnny, I'm having a good time. The first half of the show was quite fun for me. You've got me kind of juiced up a little bit about feeling like we may be coming out of a crypto winter. Do you have anything else you can provide to make me feel like we may be coming out of a crypto winter?
Let me go back to my show notes here. We talked about a lot there.
Okay.
But again, the idea of there is opportunity in crisis, and if there's a lot of crisis going on with the idea of economy and Bitcoin. I'm not saying all of crypto. I'm not saying being
no, but we know that everything right. moves like Grandpa moves.
But Bitcoin,
if Grandpa moves,
right.
People right. carry with it.
But the idea of the mindset of people who for years, like I said, discredited it or ignored it or said it's a Ponzi scheme, you're seeing these people go in all in. They're going all in, especially behind the scenes. They've been buying it for years by telling their own customers, don't get in it. And mm-hmm. they've been buying it.
Scooping it up.
And the other thing is the idea of the way they look at it. They're looking at it now as like, oh, wait, there's this asset class that really isn't gold, but it kind of like is gold. And it went through these like three black swan events in the last 18 months, meaning mm-hmm. it should be crashed to the ground. And it's at $27,000 today still.
And how is that even possible? Liquidity is so much easier than gold.
And again, the people, the whales that hold all this stuff are just sitting on it, not getting rid of it. I mean, when they watch that, you know, and the transactions are up, all the transactions on the Lightning Network that actually allows you to use Bitcoin, mm-hmm. like regular, what we understand as regular currency, that's going up and never been as high.
Well, that goes back to the conversations that we've had previously, and we should probably do another show on it, but it's like, just because you're not seeing Lightning transactions in North America doesn't mean that Lightning transactions are not growing around the world.
True global money.
Because in Africa, there is far more trust in the Bitcoin Lightning Network than yep. there is in many different denominations of local
right.
currency.
And also the idea of banking the unbankable.
Oh, and then we see the same thing in South and Central America. I mean, we've talked yes. about this many times on the show. For yes. North Americans to be like, it is the most like, I guess the basic way to put it is, it's the most white privilege thing ever to think that because I don't use the Bitcoin Lightning Network, no one else will.
Well, again,
because we rely on this secure banking system we trust at the moment.
We have an ATM at every corner. We have credit cards. We have all these things that we can access money very easily. You go to parts of Central America. You got to be kidding. But there are no
first world problems.
First of all, there are very few banks in certain areas of the world. And then the people, only like 4% of the people can even have a bank account. So you have 96% of the people can't do anything with their money other than keep it in their pocket or put it under their bed, right? But let me tell you what they have in their pocket. Even the poorest of the poor in these cities, in these countries, have cell phones. Mm-hmm. That is the great equalizer. The great equalizer is they're carrying a computer. And I'm not kidding. And I was shocked when I looked at the numbers because I'm looking at I have a coin called Telcoin, and that's what they're banking on. Like they look at the idea like the Philippines, right? A second world. I'm saying that to say. I mean, it's a highly technology.
Well, those are terms we used to use in the previous generation. But I think people know what you mean by that.
What I'm saying is like the idea of like you would think, oh, not everybody has cell phones. Most of the people there at the lowest, even the lowest income levels, still have a cell phone.
Well, listen, there's still
and that's how they're transacting.
Yeah, there's still an immense amount of poverty in Africa, but the facts do show that there are more people with cell phone access than with bank access. And that's just, if you want to just boil it down and not be very complicated, more people with cell phone access than bank access.
Nigeria has its own black market of Bitcoin that's double the amount of money than the Bitcoin you can get on a regular exchange.
Is that due to non-ability to reach an exchange?
Internet, right.
I can't reach
because
an exchange.
It's not that they don't have access to technology. Their government might lock down the internet or the idea of we don't have an internet cafe or what, however you want to look at it.
Right.
But someone is selling you somehow. They're selling them the idea of sats, right, with Bitcoin. So, but look, the idea
secondary
is
secondary market on sats. That's interesting.
And we say this all the time. Now, I might be a little wrong on double the money. It's a higher premium than the market they can get because like anything else, it's like drugs, right? I hate a correlation. That's terrible. Use a correlation of something that's beneficial, something that's negative. But the idea of I can't get my hands on it, right? But you can. We're going to pay a premium for that. Collectibles. Collectibles are that way, right?
So Concert tickets.
Concert tickets.
Football game
tickets. Concert tickets are a much better thing than what I just said with drugs.
Well, it's like tickets to a big college football game.
Taylor Swift concert. We just heard on the commentary before we started.
Man, you want to talk about something. This is something that is off topic, but on topic. So a friend of mine from law school recently went to the Taylor Swift concert in Philadelphia on night one. And he is like the most conservative dad dude you've ever met. He had such a wonderful time. But the point was, at that concert, there was this incident that happened between Taylor Swift and a security guard that's now become like this like unifying point amongst Swifties, and they like chant like what she said now, like at future concerts. So I reached out to him and I said, hey, I'm really interested in getting a ticket stub from this concert on that night when that happened. You were there. Do you know anybody that would be willing to sell me their ticket stub? His answer was, it's all digital. There is no physical product. No, there. It's you get a digital ticket. There is no physical piece of memorabilia attached to that night.
And that's sad.
It is sad.
Because, again,
so if I was Taylor Swift, I would issue a piece of physical memorabilia with every ticket sold. Even if it didn't tell me my seat number, it would say, this is a physical reminder of the night we shared together in Philadelphia on X night, this time, and how much fun that was.
This is called permission marketing, by the way. It's been around for quite a while, permission marketing. But the idea is she doesn't have to do it for every ticket holder. What she could do is she could say, if you were there on that night, send me a screenshot to this email or this website.
Right.
Load up your screenshot of your ticket, and we will send you
a physical
artifact of that night. And someone's like, oh, that's so expensive. I'm like, is it expensive?
No.
It really isn't. And listen what you get.
Not with what these people have already paid for a ticket.
Name, you get the person's physical address. You get the person's ask for text, ask for email, ask for all that stuff. And then now you're building the honeypot to be able to you gave me permission to hit you up for anything and everything along the way. And that is the cheapest warm lead. Any marketing people out there know what a warm lead is? The cheapest marketing warm lead. And also goodwill and customer experience to the people who love what you do.
Anyone with any bit of following, any bit of swag or riz or whatever words people use, should do a contest where it's like, enter all this information for me to follow you back.
Well, that's, if you're doing it right, that's what you're doing as a marketer. As a marketer, but also you have to find that fine line of not too much salesy and more experience. And the Swifties could do it. I mean, the people who love her literally would, they would do anything to get anything.
I know
from
very
her.
Smart, reasonable, competent people that are exceptionally good at their professions that lose their mind in the conversation of Swifty and what would I do for interaction.
Okay, and we follow a guy named Gary Vaynerchuk.
We've met Gary.
Met Gary. We got to record in his studio in New York.
Guys, I wouldn't say we're friends with him, but he knows your name and my name.
No, he does not know my name.
Yes, he does.
No, he does not.
He would be like, Johnny, that guy? Absolutely.
Look, I love that you're boosting my
I'm a Johnny fan.
Well, I appreciate that. Look, long story short, I think the first time I ever heard permission marketing was from his book, Crush It, by the way. I think it was 2008.
That might as well have been 30 years
ago. So Gary V's real big in the NFTs, the non-fungible token space and collectible space. And, you know, he's created this thing where, I mean, he would sell like anything possible, digital and physical altogether. He's like changing the game.
He's done a great job.
He's changing the game. Check out VFriends, V-E-E-F-R-I-N-D-S, not Scott. I'm talking to the listeners out there. Check out VFriends. Uno, the card game, has partnered with him. So he is making that step from, and he can do that because he's been doing marketing so well and for so many years, but making that step from the crazy, weird crypto world of NFTs and crypto and Ethereum and all this stuff and community building, and then he moves into the world of Uno, the card game, is allowing him to do a partnership with his VFriends. That's when you see this innovation, that Web3 innovation, crypto innovation, going from the weirdness of the nerdy, like, elite class into the living rooms of people of the living rooms of America.
Well, he's about to do a really, and maybe he's already started this, a really interesting collaboration with Snoop Dogg, which is like the most, like, Snoop Dogg has got to be like this cultural phenomenon of how do I go from like this most like anti pop culture, like your parents won't allow you to listen to me,
right,
to now like I hang out with Martha Stewart
and
Gary V, and I make like things for kids and families.
Well, it's
I mean, he's had
he opens
him,
doors
him
crazy
and Dr.
doors.
Dre have just done like a tremendous job of going like, oh, Dr. Dre was like, oh, I was in NWA.
Well, I just heard Dr. Dre doesn't leave his house now. He's like a con, like in his
compound. That's probably pretty smart. I read where Mariah Carey cost herself $10,000 to leave the house, so I probably wouldn't leave the house either.
You're right, because you have to have security.
That's a lot of money. All right, when we come back on Beyond the Blockchain,
presidents.
Johnny, we're going to talk about presidents.
Yeah.
But we got to go beyond the blockchain.
No, you're right.
All right, presidents first, and then.
Oh, how about best crazy presidential stories?
Bang. I like it. When we come back on Beyond the Blockchain.
Welcome back to Beyond the Blockchain with Scott Tindall.
Hey, folks. Welcome back to Beyond the Blockchain with Scott and Johnny. We're having so much fun on this show. You know, if you could have caught the commentary in between the breaks, I think we were trying to solve some world problems there in a minute, but you know, we didn't get to all the solutions, Johnny. So now I need to get back on track. I need to get back where we're going. We need two things, Johnny. We got a final segment here. One, I want to talk about presidential candidates, how they feel about cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
And before we're done, I want to go beyond the blockchain.
Okay.
So that's your guidelines. So
quick.
Keep it between the white and the yellow for the next 10 minutes. What we got?
Super quick here. So number one, Joe Biden, anti. The Democrats wanted to put a 30% tax on, again, power. power for Bitcoin mining companies. That's how they're going to get them. They weren't going to do regulatory. They'll get you on a 30% tax on the power.
That's a big tax.
So he is very anti. So Joe Biden, anti. I would say he's anti-innovation in my point, except for the climate stuff. He's all, you know, solar and all that crap.
Right.
Okay, the other thing is Donald Trump hates Bitcoin too. Hates it. Again, just doesn't, even though he's got NFTs, by the way.
Well, he does have quite the NFT portfolio, and they were very bad.
And they're terrible. The Trump NFTs should be right there. Shouldn't vote for him just for that.
That's enough to disqualify you as a candidate for presidency.
Okay, so then you have, let's see, there's other people. Nikki Haley has not said anything. DeSantis says he's for Bitcoin, big time for innovation in Bitcoin. Okay, so DeSantis pro innovation
for now.
Pro Web3 for now.
Unless Disney does it, then
oh yeah,
no thanks.
And don't get me started on. I think he's done a very good job. I mean, I love what he did during the pandemic. But anytime you start banning anything, it has a real negative kind of like Murphy's Law of like unintended consequences.
It's the flywheel, right?
Right.
And so like that flywheel of unintended consequences.
And so then I'm like, oh yeah, you're a banner of anything, and that's when I say, oh yeah, that's when you lose me. But I'm not a voter to begin with. Mm. My vote is I don't vote because of what you're offering me. So, but right. I am now a single issue voter.
Meaning, tell me,
I care of innovation. I want to see who cares about innovation. I don't want us losing to Asia and China and Japan, everybody else in Europe, because we put regulatory compliance on innovation. Robert F. Kennedy, by the way, very interesting things he's saying right now. I'm looking at Robert F. Kennedy a little bit, but he's very pro Bitcoin, very pro Web3. And then other than that, Marianne Williamson, I'm not going to bring it. Marianne Williamson is an interesting character. I think she's very sweet. I'd like to like meet her, but I would never vote for her. She's pro a little bit.
Do we know where Tulsi Gabbard is on this?
We do not, but she's not going to run. She's not running. She's going to become a pundit. But so that's my rundown. And then there is Vivek Ramaswamy.
Vivek Ramaswamy.
Ramaswamy.
Yeah, he's getting a lot of attention.
He is, and I like him a lot. He's actually from the farm. He started a pharmaceutical company, not an opioid company, as I understand. But he, of course, his big thing is not so much pro crypto or pro. He's very much pro competition, like very much a free market person.
And he's got some very interesting points on pro immigration and why that matters.
I'd like to see him on a debate. I'd like to see him talk because
I'd like to see a real. I would just like to see a real debate
and not get into hand size and weirdness, right, and calling nicknames.
I don't care about the size of your hands and if you eat pudding with your fingers. Well, I want to know what's going on with your brain.
And that's like must-watch TV, but I would like a true, like, let's get down to the idea world, and I think that guy would be an idea. Look, he's not going to have a chance, I think, at all coming up.
Certainly not this
term, again, but
maybe
next
one.
He's putting his toe in the water,
yeah,
right?
And he's getting some good name recognition along the way.
And you also need the ideas person pushing ideas. Like maybe if he's getting attacked, he's like, I know I'm not going to win, but if I can get my three or four ideas in there and maybe make it to some part of the platform, and maybe you bring me on if my innovations are or something, maybe that's pretty cool too. So there you go.
You know what I regret? That Ross Perot didn't have an ability to run as a candidate with today's current climate. Because he ran before there was YouTube, social media.
Dude, he got 50% of the vote.
And he had no.
It pretty much got Clinton elected.
Yeah, he got Clinton elected.
He really did.
But I'm saying, like, give Ross Perot, like,
dude, I'm all ears for Ross Perot. That was actually a pin that I cannot get my hands on.
Okay.
I'm all ears for Ross Perot because it's a big thing. Again, young people out there, which
satellites.
I have a feeling young people are not listening to FM radio. I mean, radio in general, talk radio. I'm just saying the average age is about 55.
You know what? I think my 12-year-old may be listening tonight, which may drop the age by like nothing. It's still old.
My 50-year-old wife is bringing it down, so she's listening tonight. But so beyond the blockchain, your favorite presidential story.
You want mine?
Do you want mine first?
I want yours first.
Okay, I got it. President Nixon was friends with Jackie Gleason. Okay, and the story goes somehow this is where it gets a little weird for me, but President Nixon got away from a Secret Service detail,
mm-hmm.
and he took his friend Jackie Gleason.
The comic.
In Florida, to a base, an Air Force base, to see an alien.
Which one?
A dead alien.
Which one?
What?
Which Air Force base?
I don't know.
Did they, like, Did they embalm the alien?
Look, dude, you've seen Independence Day, hadn't you?
I have, yeah.
A lot of that's based on a lot of weird rumors and stories. Look, this is a rumor. It's been around for a very long time.
I don't even think it's a rumor. I just believe it.
And what's amazing is it's not so much with, of course, the government's not going to say anything, but over the years, they have interviewed Jackie Gleason's family. This is the entertainer, young people.
Yeah,
the entertainer.
No, not young people. Young people's grandparents.
I'm being facetious. And so Jackie Gleason, very famous entertainer. He was a funny man. And his family said after this event, he was never as lighthearted in private again with them, because when the wife asked what happened, he told them the story, or what he could tell them, right? Mm-hmm. And the idea was it changed his view of his place in the universe so much that it upset him. Like, he didn't know his place in the universe anymore. So that is my favorite presidential story of just a weird presidential story.
Let's get presidential story.
And why no one's made a movie of this? This should be a movie.
Of course it should.
I mean, you could either make it a comedy. You could almost make it a comedy.
But do you have to get permission from the Pentagon to make the movie?
Look, man, I saw a movie called Bubba Hotep that was JFK was an elderly African-American man that they changed his brain. Look, trust
clearly
me.
Clearly, you don't need permission.
Bubba Hotep, by the way, is an awesome movie. It is an absolutely awesome movie,
I've
by the way.
I've got that on VHS.
Yeah, of course. On VHS, which is the only way to watch this. But
you've introduced me to something new.
Bubba Hotep is a fantastic movie. And also
Bruce Campbell.
So if you're into great cult movies, you know, Bruce Campbell is by the way, plays Elvis, plays Elvis, who is under an assumed name. So it's Elvis and JFK go fight mummies.
Yes.
Bubba Hotep.
Yes.
That literally is what the movie is about. And JFK is a African-American elderly man who can't walk.
I don't even know how to follow up the rest of the show with that. I think now I should move on to a new topic. Because I'm not certain.
I'm sorry, I can already tell we're pushing the break here.
I'm not certain how I'm going to follow up on that.
We got a minute.
We have 1 minute. I will tell you one of my favorite presidential stories. It comes from the musical Hamilton.
Okay.
I'm just kidding. People
know that story, I think, really well.
I don't really have any great presidential stories. They could sing it, yeah. Yeah. Oh, I do have a great story for you, though. I took my daughters to see The Little Mermaid this weekend.
Oh, goodness.
On Friday night.
Well, did they enjoy it?
They had so much fun. And
yes. Forget those critics. Let them kids decide.
Look, I don't care what a critic says.
Right, exactly.
My question would be, what do my almost 13, 10, and 7-year-old daughters think?
That's what I'm talking about.
That matters way more to me than some critic. Anyway, so... Philip, we're not going to end the show with this, but I do recommend that our listeners go check out. There's a new song in The Little Mermaid.
Uh-oh.
Yep. And Lin-Manuel Miranda, who wrote Hamilton, wrote In the Heights. He wrote a lot of the music from Moana and Encanto and some of these. He's got a new song, and it's in the show. And
it's going to be a rocker.
Man, no. It's called, I don't even remember the name of it, but...
I'll be learning it on my piano lessons. I can tell you that pretty soon.
Look, you should rap it.
Okay. Can I leave you my favorite quote about critics?
Please.
By Frank Zappa.
Yeah.
He was talking about rock and roll critics who hated his stuff, even though it's still famous today. So his statement about rock and roll critics was, are you kidding me? Why would you listen to a rock critic? They're people who can't write. Writing for people who can't read.
Ooh. Beautiful. What a great way to end the show. We're going to end the show with rock critics are... writing for people who can't read, and it just makes me happy. Moving on. We'll see you next week on Beyond the Blockchain.